A wonderful message, thank you. As Mr. Smith was on his deathbed, he attempted to formulate a plan that would allow him to take at least some of his considerable wealth with him. He called for the three people he trusted most: his lawyer, his doctor, and his minister. He told them, "I'm going to give you each $30,000 in cash before I die. And at my funeral, I want you to place the money in my casket so that I can try to take it with me." All three agreed to do this and were given the money. The man died, and at the funeral, each approached the casket in turn and placed an envelope inside. While riding in the limousine back from the cemetery, the minister said, "I have to confess something to you all. Brother Smith was a good church person all his life, and I know he would have wanted me to do this. The church needed a baptismal font very badly, and I took $10,000 of the money he gave me and bought one. I only put $20,000 in the casket." His physician then said, "Well, since we're confiding in one another, I might as well tell you that I didn't put the full $30,000 in the casket either. Mr. Smith had a disease that could have been diagnosed sooner if I had this very new machine, but the machine cost $20,000 and I couldn't afford it then. So I used $20,000 of the money to buy the machine so that I might be able to save another patient. I know that Smith would have wanted me to do that." The lawyer then said, "I'm ashamed of both of you. When I put my envelope into that coffin, it held my personal check for the full $30,000. You and I live in a culture, in a society that is all about getting, all about the need to acquire things. Every commercial on TV, at the movies, on Facebook, are geared toward telling us that we live incomplete lives if we don't get this car or that house or buy this toy or that vacuum cleaner or this cell phone. We have been convinced that it is in the accumulation of things that we will be made happy and find our fulfillment in our lives. In North America, we live in a highly materialistic world that tells us every day that our feelings of emptiness or lack will be satiated if we just do a little retail therapy and go shopping and buy something else that we really don't need. But the Jesus message is a very different message, a countercultural message to the message of acquisition. The message of Jesus and the message of Paul, who began the earliest house churches throughout the Mediterranean, the message that they gave us was that our joy and sense of fulfillment in life is not derived by getting, but its exact counterpart. It is in the very act of giving that we will experience wholeness. This morning, Paul's letter to the church in Corinth reminds us that experiencing the grace and joy and blessing of God comes in giving of ourselves to others as Christ gave of himself. And so I'd like to share with you why a life of giving and generosity out of deep gratitude is a wonderful way for us to live our lives. Our scripture this morning is taken from Paul's second letter to the church in Corinth. Paul went on three trips throughout the Mediterranean, establishing little house churches, some with Gentile Christians and some with Jewish Christians. And he grew those churches by sharing with people about his experience of the risen Christ and sharing the teachings of Jesus and how they live to an how they lead to an abundant life. In this letter, Paul encourages the church in Corinth to be generous as the church in Philippi has just been in giving to their Jewish Christian brothers and sisters in Jerusalem who have been devastated by a famine and are struggling. And so Paul addresses various reasons on why it is important for the Gentile church to give to the Jewish Christian church in Jerusalem. First of all, Paul reminds us about what and how to give. He encourages us to give according to what we are able, and not out of a sense of obligation or pressure, but to give out of a state of joy with cheerful hearts, as Jesus gave himself, because he wanted to, not because he felt required to give. There are so many people at Knox who give so cheerfully and willingly. You are such a generous congregation. When you hear about a need, whether it's for a new organ, or for the refugee family, or for Tina, a homeless woman living in a tent on our property, or for the minister's discretionary fund that I use to help people both within the church who are in need or people who walk through our doors in need, or for school lunches at Springwood School, you give generously and willingly with generous and cheerful hearts. And you give out of a deep sense of gratitude for what you have been given. Like the church in Macedonia in Philippi, you have giving hearts. And you feel blessed in being able to give, and you do so without resentment or obligation, but cheerfully and willingly. Secondly, Paul asks the church to give because it's about justice and fairness and redistributing wealth. Because, as he points out, some have more than others and others have less. And there needs to be fairness so that those who have a lot don't have too much and those who have too little don't have too little. It's about a redistribution of wealth within the congregation. He says, we give in order to help others to be fair, to be just. I know a couple who weren't even connected to a church, but they had come to a church at Living Spirit where I last served, looking for a minister to preside over her mother's funeral. And so I did that. And she was so grateful for the church offering that safe space for her to celebrate her mother's life, that she wanted to give back. She was the daughter, she was a physician, and her husband was an engineer, and they had a beautiful home in Springbank. And their mother had left a home to be divided among the two daughters. But when this woman found out that the church I was serving was sponsoring a refugee family from Syria, she gave their second home to the family from Syria for a full year, rent-free. It was their way of making things fairer in an unfair world where governments at war destroy lives. This couple knew they lived a life of financial abundance, and that this Muslim family from Syria had lost everything. And so they gave them a free home for a year. It was an incredible act of generosity, and they gave it freely and willingly. They could have rented it out for a year and made more money, but instead they gave their home to a family who needed one. It is important that we seek to make an unfair world, as Paul says, more fair. And when we do, we are blessed and filled with joy for having done so. This morning, you'll be asked to sign a petition, if you so choose, to help life for homeless people in Parksville to have a better life, a more secure life. The church is all about giving so that the world's abundance is redistributed more fairly, more equitably. So that's the second reason we are asked to give. Thirdly, Paul encourages the church in Corinth to give because earlier they had made a commitment to give, and he challenges them to follow through and be faithful to their commitment. So sometimes we give simply because we are faithful to our commitments and to our relationships. I never thought of my father, who was a lawyer, so I felt I could tell that joke. I never thought of my father as a particularly generous man. I never saw him necessarily give to other organizations. I'm sure he did, but I don't know about it. And I know he gave me, when I was a small child, $5 every week when I would go off to church on my own. But I never thought about him as particularly generous. And yet through the years, I have realized what he did give. And after he died, I remembered that every year, on the anniversary of his best friend, on his best friend's death, who had died when he was 18 in a car accident, my father sent flowers to his friend's mother until the day my father died. And I learned that if a widow came to his law office and she didn't have much money, he did her legal work for free. I learned that from people who told me about that. My father gave out of a sense of commitment to his mother's friend, Mrs. Hassan. For 44 years, my father remembered his best friends and the grief of his mother and gave flowers. I think that's a committed giver. And I believe my father derived a great deal of fulfillment in giving to Mrs. Hassan that gift of remembrance. And finally, Paul encourages the church to give because Jesus was a giver who gave everything he could, even his very life. And Paul reminds us that it is in following the example of Jesus as a life giver that we give in order to experience the richness and blessings of a spiritual life. And that is so true, isn't it? It feels amazing. We feel blessed when we give to someone or something beyond ourselves. I invite you to think of a time when you gave to someone. Maybe it was simply a smile or a hug. Maybe it was some change to a grandchild for an ice cream. Maybe it was something bigger like money to go to school. What was it that you gave, whether small or great? And how did that make you feel? I'd invite you to turn to the person next to you and share what it was that you gave, because I know you're all givers. I know that you'll be able to think of something that you've given in your life, whether it's given life to your children, which you can remind them of that regularly, or words of wisdom or advice. We're often embarrassed by what we give. We don't want to share with people. I have a good friend who thinks of herself as selfish. But she's one of the most giving people I know. She's always giving comfort or encouragement, always thinking about others. And I know it has come back to her also. She has given much and she has received much. So just turn to the person in little groupings, find somebody, and share with them what you have given. Something, it can be small. Hi, Nicole.
What was it that you've given?
Friendship?
Mm-hmm.
I guess.
I remember one time. I'd invite you to come back and just call out some of the things you've given. We talked about giving time or saving up money to give a special gift to someone. What else?
Drives.
Pardon?
Drives.
Giving a ride to somebody. Food.
A bed.
Support. A bed.
Time.
Hugs.
Love.
Money.
I like to give when our kids were small or, you know, young. I always like to give them a gift that we could do together.
A gift of, so a giving them a memory.
Yes.
You're giving them memories. That's a wonderful gift to give our grandchildren, memories, special memories, time spent. And Eileen? Is your time. Agreed. Raising money for charity. Does she wear a sign? Hug me? Yeah. Well, that's a reciprocal giving, isn't it? Yes.
Listening.
Listening heart.
Encouragement.
Prayer.
Visiting
shut-ins. All those wonderful things, ways of giving. It makes you feel good. And when you go and visit a shut-in, you know, you might go and you're feeling kind of down and you feeling better than when you went in. Giving, that is the mystery. That's a mystery of God. It's not in getting that we experience fullness, but in giving that we experience a sense of blessing and grace and joy. I'd like to share personally with you why I give to the church. I give to the church because I believe in the uniqueness of the church. I know there are lots of people who give worthy causes, and there are countless worthy causes in this world. Millions of people give to cancer and heart and stroke and diabetes and MS and all sorts of terrible diseases that rob us of our lives and cause so much suffering, and it's important that we search for cures. And I understand that we need to give to these causes to help eliminate suffering. But as Jane Hardy reminds us, why is it that when we die, we ask people to give to the thing that killed us instead of the thing that gave us life, which perhaps was the church? I give to the church because the church has always given me life. And I'm not just talking about my salary. It gives me a full life. It is in the church that I have met the most wonderful people on this planet. People who are loving and caring and kind and passionate about making a difference on this planet. Now, we're not perfect. We're not perfect at all. But we're trying to be better. People who care about homelessness, who care about the environment, who care about injustice and about peacemaking, world of conflict. I give to the church because I believe that the Spirit of God is using the church to bring the spiritual teachings of Jesus into the world. And the world needs the values that Jesus taught. Churches do not canvass neighborhoods for giving. The church depends solely on the good hearts of the people who come to church to support it. Far fewer people in this world understand the value of what the church is all about the joy and fulfillment that comes in finding a group of people dedicated to embodying the teachings of Jesus, of being a community of faith dedicated to a healing and caring ministry, a group of people dedicated to social justice and outreach, a people dedicated to the spiritual teachings and learning all about them, a people dedicated to having fun and joy and friendship and making a community, how to love one another as Christ loved, and a people dedicated to good news, to coming Sunday after Sunday to celebrate, to sing, even if they're feeling desperate and sad and in grief because they're looking for hope. The church is the only organization I know that talks freely about God and encourages us every week with hope for a better world and tries to focus on the good news that is happening in the world and prays together for those who are suffering and that trusts that the Spirit of God is alive and well, working in the world to bring hope and possibility. It's the only place I know that talks about miracles happening. The church is a unique organization that gives me life, and I hope it gives you life. And that's why I give my money to the church, because I see miracles happen and lives transformed every day by us being the church. For me, the church is the only place where life-giving spiritual values are taught. And this church decided a few months ago that we would have four key values that we would live out of: compassion, inclusion, joy, and spirituality. I believe in those values. And so while everyone gives to worthy causes, I give to the church. Because the church at its best is a mysterious force of goodness in this world that has the blessing of God upon it. Over the next 3 weeks, you will be invited to sort through your priorities and consider what you will commit to giving to this church in this coming year. And you'll be asked to give a commitment to the church. Now, I know some of you cannot afford to give much, and some of you can. But as Paul reminds us, it's important for each of us to consider what we can give according to our means, not to give beyond what we can afford, or not out of a sense of obligation or pressure, or to feel guilted into giving, but to give cheerfully and in trust that what you give will be a blessing to others and to ourselves. I'd like to close this time with a short video from the youth from the Uganda Martyrs United Church who share why they give.
I give to show gratitude.
Our time,
our gifts,
our skills,
our passion,
and our money.
In other words,
all of ourselves.
God's mission.
To follow Jesus.
To heal the world.
Join me today.
It's in my heart to give.
It's part of my faith to give.
It's in my nature to give.
It's in my pocket to give.
I give to show gratitude.
I give to follow Jesus.
It's part of my faith to give.
Let us rise to sing, grateful.